Hey, this is Preston.
Hi, this is Case.
And this is episode 5 of Asian Affairs. So my co-host Yoon isn't able to join us today. Don't worry, she's going to be back with us next week. In the meantime, we're going to have two special guests, and today we have Case Lee.
Hi, everyone.
What we're going to talk about today is the recent scandal of a certain Matthew DeStarkey, who's an instructor at University of Wisconsin-Whitewater. In particular, he was caught publicly mocking Asians on Twitter, and the response to it has been very interesting, to say the least, including the university's cover-up of the situation and the issue. For the listeners that may not be aware of the situation, could you briefly explain what's going on, Case?
Sure, and maybe I'll just give a rundown of how I came across this. I mean, I guess some of you know that I'm kind of new to these Asian online spaces, and I do kind of interact with more Asian, pro-Asian individuals on Twitter. So I believe on Friday of last week, I was on Twitter and I was just kind of observing an exchange between one user and this other individual by the name of Matthew DeStarkey. And it's Matthew D-E and then Starkey. So he was using his real name on Twitter, and the exchange was, it went like this. So Matthew DeStarkey initially posted a photo of him kind of mocking an Asian man, pretending to be an Asian man. So he had this wooden bowl on his head and his eyes were squinted, and he had his hands pressed together in a mock prayer. And he had captioned the photo with, "When your crush tells you that she dates only Asians." So, you know, obviously this tweet was directed at Asians. It was the intent behind it was to mock Asians, and it was of a racist caricature of Asians. So you can understand that the other individual who saw this had a response to it, and his response was to flip off this person. In response to that tweet, Matthew DeStarkey then said, "Short ass finger." You know, I think it's very clear. I don't think that we have to infer very much to determine what he meant by that and what stereotype, right, he meant when he tweeted that. So I saw that go down, and then I saw some other people kind of commenting on Twitter as well, saying that this person might be an instructor. So I did a search, and sure enough, this person is a supplemental instructor at the University of Wisconsin-Whitewater.
Thanks for sharing that. And what's really important about this entire situation is that this instance is just a microcosm of the greater issues that are happening in terms of anti-Asian racism, the emasculation of Asian men. This isn't an isolated incident. This is just one example of a shared suffering that Asian men and Asians in general face when they grow up in America. And this kind of gave me flashbacks in terms of my own upbringing, my own childhood. So I never really experienced this until high school. When I was in high school, that's when I started receiving taunts, anti-Asian, racist insults, things of that nature, where they would joke about my dick size, all these other things to denigrate me.
Can I ask, because I've never been on the receiving, obviously, the receiving end of these type of dick jokes. So this actually happened at school. This is something that happens to Asian guys.
It happens to Asian guys all across the country. Like you ask someone on the East Coast, on the West Coast, in the Midwest, the South, it probably happened to them. And that's crazy. This shared suffering experience by hundreds of thousands of Asian men. And here's the thing about these kind of jokes. A lot of Asians don't live in enclaves, so they're not necessarily protected by numbers. They're not protected by close proximity to people that are just like them. A lot of us grow up racially isolated. The thing that we have to do is somewhat of a survival mode type of ordeal, where you know, these are our formative years. We're going through puberty during high school, and people are just chipping away at our developing masculinities. It's traumatizing. So you pair that with the fact that you're isolated. What are you going to do to survive? And for a lot of people, a lot of Asian men, it's trying to act cool, trying to act like you're not triggered. You don't necessarily like acknowledge the stereotype, but you're just like, oh, that's not me. I'm not triggered because it doesn't have to do with me. But that's not really a solution to the issue. That's just a way to put a band-aid on it. And then you just remember this, and you keep acting like this as you get older and older, where by the time you actually get to past college, you're in the workforce where you, depending on where you work, you don't necessarily hear this anymore. It's hard for you to actually express what you're feeling because you spent so many years during your formative years trying to suppress those very emotions in order to survive.
And I actually can say that I can appreciate the difficulty in, I guess, sharing this vulnerable part of you. And I can understand that, you know, much of this has been kind of suppressed over the years. Despite that, when you saw this photo, so I'm sure we saw it at different times, but when you saw it, what was your gut reaction?
Oh, it's visceral. Something happens in the body where it's like a chest tightening, cortisol rising, flashbacks, as I was talking about, to the high school years. It's not a pleasant experience. But then it's weird because you've suppressed your emotions so much, you almost act like you're so jaded about it. It's like this another instance of a white guy doing an Asian joke. What's new? And it shouldn't be like that. We should be able to fully express our frustration, our negative emotions about these kind of anti-Asian jokes, which aren't jokes. They're just insults.
Right. It's almost like being a victim or victimized twice because you're humiliated in a very public way. And then if you decide to say anything in response to it, then you run the risk of being called too sensitive. I think that's another kind of thing that we saw here. In this case, going back to the original gut reaction that you shared, the very visceral reaction, that's kind of the same reaction that I get. And that's the same reaction that I get when I see these images and same reaction that I got when I saw Matthew DeStarkey's tweet. And when I went on to ask other individuals on Twitter, they shared very similar things, flashbacks and physical reactions, visceral reactions to this image. And it really was similar to kind of what victims of post-traumatic stress disorder experience. With that, you know, I think we can conclude that these jokes are not jokes, that they're not just, and they're also not just isolated incidents. There's something, they're things that we've been dealing with from elementary school, many of us from childhood until to adulthood. When we saw that, I think a lot of us thought that it was important for the university to know that this person who teaches on their campus behaved in this manner.
Touching upon that, can you talk to me a little about what made Matthew DeStarkey, not just the fact that he was a white guy, but like what else made it problematic in terms of him publicly being racist?
I thought about this. I thought, you know, if he were just a student, would I bring this up to the university's attention? I'm not sure. I think there should be consequences for being racist. I think that students can act immaturely, but immaturity is just a mitigating circumstance, right? People should still be held accountable for their actions. But I think the fact that he was placed in this more influential position of supplemental instructor was more of a reason for us to reach out to the university, because I believe he still has that position. So he is not just a student, but he is someone that the university trusts to lead sections. I'm guessing as a supplemental instructor, he lectures during his own sections, he grades students, and so on and so forth. So he's in this position, he puts himself out there as a representative of the university. Likewise, the university on their own webpage has him listed as an employee, as an instructor. And so, you know, when that happens, it sends a certain message to the student body, and that's that students look up to their instructors. Instructors are role models. They're in positions of leadership. And that doesn't just stop when they're outside of the classroom. It doesn't just stop when it's nighttime or the weekends and they're doing their own thing. It doesn't mean that they can engage in racism. I think that when you're an instructor or professor or faculty, you are in that position 24/7. And I think the university should see it in that same light too. And so when he's here saying, hey, I'm an instructor, but he's engaging in this sort of activity for all students, for all the public to see, then the university should know and should take some sort of action.
Definitely. It's one thing if your peers are racist towards you. In some ways, it's to be expected as an Asian person in America. But when it's coming from people in positions of power, of authority, that's when it becomes a very difficult situation for individuals. You feel this isolation, you feel this hopelessness, because the people that you would turn to aren't even there to take care of you either. And that is a really hopeless situation that definitely adds to mental health issues that Asian Americans face due to racism in childhood.
And speaking of people who should take care of you, you know, I wrote this article about it, and it was really for myself. I just wanted to document the issue and also touch on Asian American students being bullied in the school system. Then to my surprise, it started getting a good amount of shares, and somebody had actually shared it on the university's, I guess, Twitter page. And so I was paying special attention to that because I wanted to see if there was going to be a response. So I believe it was the same day, but this exchange that I went on to observe was even more troubling, I would say, than the initial tweet itself. What I'm talking about is this student, or this person who said he's a student at University of Wisconsin Whitewater, tweeted to the page and also included this professor in his tweet. And he said, you know, that I'm very shaken up by what happened. Is something going to happen to instructor Matthew D. Starkey? Because I don't feel safe.
Yeah. And her reaction is just mind-boggling. It's a certain Professor Ozal M. Toms. And yeah, she is a diversity and inclusion advocate for the university, very publicly so. And what she said in her tweet when she was tagged is, why am I being tagged?
Yeah.
What?
That was her very, very first response. So, you know, you're younger, Preston, but I've been in situations where I was a professor at law school last year or 2 years ago. And if I were in the same position and not even being the diversity and inclusion advocate for the school, if I were just in a position of professor, and also as a minority, as a woman of color, I would have been first very sensitive to the fact that a student is brave enough or has found the courage to approach me to speak about this sort of thing, because that even that alone is not easy. And then second of all, you know, not even being, like I said, an advocate, but just as a professor, if I weren't able to help personally, I would have pointed that student in the right direction. And that was not the response that we saw from this advocate.
I very dryly just replied, as a DEI advocate, you seem to be the right person to address this issue. And I was like, I can't believe I'm having to spell this out to her. At least initially.
And did she respond?
Nope, no response. No response.
Okay. And not only was there no sincere or real substantive response from her. But what we saw after that was even more mind-boggling. And that was citizens, and I say citizens, but it's, you know, it's just people on Twitter, people on Facebook, learning about what happened and then expressing their anger by going onto the Twitter site and the Facebook site of this university and demanding some sort of action. And what happened to those comments?
So what we started seeing is censorship. As a public university, obviously censorship is extremely troubling and problematic. What they were doing was basically people would be posting on the pages of the university, either Facebook, Twitter, social media, to try to get the attention, try to elicit response. And what they were doing, and we were seeing this in real time, is they were deleting comments.
Yeah, that was just baffling. I'm just imagining that there's a person behind the screen on the other end, and this is the person who was hired by the university to maintain their public forum, meaning their public Facebook page, their public Twitter page. And here this person is on the other end, and he is reading these comments about an instructor on their campus being racist. And instead of calling the right people and saying, hey, we need to pay attention to this, this is horrible that this is happening, here this person is clicking away and deleting everyone's comments. So I just found that to be shocking.
It's insane.
To say the least.
It's insane. And there definitely needs to be repercussions for that happening. And I think we're seeing that now. The university is being called out for deleting comments.
The university is being called out for deleting comments. We're seeing more attention drawn to this issue. We saw Next Shark, an Asian American publication, or actually it's the Global Voices of Asians, published an article about what happened and also
Resonate as well.
Right. So it's picking up and people are starting to realize this is something that we need to pay attention to. It's not just an isolated incident. And if we let this slide, first of all, what does it mean for Matthew DeStarkey, right? If we let somebody who is willing to, in a public forum, despite being an instructor, engage in this behavior, and when being called out by an Asian individual, instead of saying, hey, dude, I'm sorry, that was poor discretion on my part. When he was called out, he just threw back another negative stereotype, a very harmful, dehumanizing one. So I think that kind of speaks volumes about this person's character. And if we kind of let this slide with regard to this person, where would this person end up in the future, right? What position of power would he specifically end up in? That's one thing. And the second thing is, what if we let this slide, what does that say about racism in towards our community in general? Will the greater society look at racism towards Asians kind of in the same way that they always have, actually? That there's this unspoken rule that racism against Black people is unacceptable, as it should be, and everyone would speak up loudly about that, including us, right? Because it's the right thing to do. But also that racism against Asians is fair game.
It's because Asians are in this limbo, this race purgatory. So to white people, Asians are just minorities. They're people of color, and they're the easiest one to pick on. But to other people of color, we're not people of color. That's why, for example, Dr. Toms had such a curt reaction. Why am I being tagged? Because, okay, I don't want to say that she necessarily thought that way, but it's a possibility that in the back of her head, Asian wasn't necessarily people of color in her mind. Hence the reaction of why am I being tagged?
And without even having to go into that analysis, because frankly, I don't really care about what other groups think of Asians, whether they consider us minorities or people of color. I believe we can take back our own power and we define for us what is acceptable and what is not acceptable. It's up to us to teach the other groups, the rest of society, how we can be treated.
Yeah, we can't stay silent. As we know, silence is complicity. So if something like this happens, whether it be in real life, online, whatever space, being silent is endorsing whatever negative stereotype is being thrown or hurled or anything like that at you. We can't let ourselves be punching bags anymore. We actually need to stand up and call things out as they are, demand action, and demand action from ourselves as well.
So I agree with you on both points. Number one, I don't think that silence is an option. And number two, I think we need to demand change. So I think if we reason with the other side and we say, hey, this is wrong because, and then we name the reasons why, I'm not sure that would be so effective. I think what we need to do is keep the pressure on and let the other side know that when they are complicit in racism, when they engage in cover-up, when they delete messages by citizens who are concerned about their faculty or staff or whatever being racist, that there will be consequences. And that is the message that we need to send as the Asian American community.
Definitely. So that concludes today's episode of Asian Affairs. You can follow us on Twitter. My handle is PresonWong888.
And I am Case Files, that's KaseFiles.
Asian Affairs releases episodes every Tuesday and Thursday. For more pro-Asian content, be sure to check out Not Your Asian Psychic and Journey to the West, as well as our website in the link below, Pro-Asian. So this has been Preston.
And this is Case, thanks for having me.
Thank you for being on the show. And see you next time on Asian Affairs.